You're listening to the Online Pastor Coach Podcast, the show that brings you new and fresh ways to connect with your digital church, with your hosts, Joey Santos and Jason Morris.
The first, like I landed in Brazil at noon on a Thursday, and Friday, 5 in the morning, I was living in the car with my dad to a 6,000-mile ride in 7 days.
Oof.
To take him to his hometown and other, because he has not seen his hometown in 30 years.
Hmm.
And so that, I'm telling you, that to me was this whole like immersion into Brazilian culture I have not seen in a very long time.
Hmm.
Because Minas is a whole different state. It's a whole different
mm-hmm.
culture. And that was fun. Like that was fun. But you know, my great grandfather, my dad's grandfather,
mm-hmm.
he was a slave. And where I'm hearing all these stories. Like I'm connecting with people. Yeah. I mean, it just like he was a slave at the house where later the president of Brazil came from. This little boy that was there, he was a slave in there. And the little boy became the president of Brazil who built Brasilia, the capital. So, yeah, it's all, it's one, like, it was just this wild learning, you know, and it came to my mind about legacy, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, here's my great-grandfather, who's a slave, came out of it. And then my grandfather grew up watching that and saying, you know, I'm taking this to the next level with my family. I'm not going to let my family go through what he went through. So
right.
my grandfather went through all kinds of things because he lost his wife on my dad's birth. So my dad never really met his mom because at the birth, she passed away.
Mm.
So, and my dad, at one point to make a better life, my grandfather took my dad and his siblings to Rio de Janeiro. So they lived in the slums in Rio. My dad has stories about like 8 years old, walking to school in the morning and there's like bodies on the ground. Oof. Because it's in the slums and people are being shot every day.
Right.
And so my dad grew up in that and he's like, I'm not going to have this kind of life. And I'm not going to have my kids have this kind of life. Right. So here I am. So it's kind of interesting. We wow. watch this progression and for us, the legacy from one generation to another has been work ethics.
Mm-hmm.
That's the legacy that we kind of, you know, my brother in Brazil, but he's the director of Ford Motor Company. He's very successful. And we look at our kids and we're like, we're trying to provide the kids a much better future, you know, but it's kind of interesting when I look at that is one rule we have in our house is I tell my kids, there's no such, from very little, there's no such a thing as free money. So don't keep asking for stuff. Now mm-hmm. you can earn everything you want. You can earn anything. It's just a matter of how much effort you want to put into it. And today they're 14 and 12. They don't ask for stuff. They ask, what can I do? I want to do. And my 12-year-old mm-hmm. just bought his own phone. He just bought his own cell phone.
That's right? The way to do it.
So I'm in my mind, I was like, now I know why I am the way I am, because I look at four generations back.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of very interesting to look at from that perspective, because my dad never did that to me necessarily, but we never had much at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the work ethics is what has put us in this path.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so anyways.
So one question, because you did mention this, you could really do your work from anywhere.
Yes.
How did you pastoring remotely church in the bar work for the past month?
Okay, that is actually a very good question though, because first of all, being gone for a whole month in a brand new campus, like the Church of the Bar, right? We revive it, Church of the Bar in December, in October. Mm-hmm. So coming out of this pandemic, so it's kind of interesting to look at it for me to be gone for a whole month,
right?
At this stage. And the thing I think that was incredibly interesting to experience, it was how much the core team that we have, that's brand new, how much they embrace the mission without me being there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going for exactly 4 weekends. I was not there for 4 weekends. And never miss a beat. And here's the interesting thing: what happened? It grew.
that says a lot, right there. Right?
You know what I mean? I mean, it grew.
No, I do know what you mean. And so I want to get the chronology right. You like pre-COVID, you had Church in the Bar, right?
Yes.
Building community. COVID hits. Of course, the bar is closed.
Yeah.
Bar opens back up October. Right?
Yes.
2 months. You leave for a month in December.
Yes.
Right? And the church grows.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you just, because you were, I mean, here it is May, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You left again, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So since October, which is, you know, I'm really bad at math, but since October till now, is
eight months
of the 8 months till present. How many of those months have you actually been there?
Six, because two okay. months.
So you're gone 2 months out of 8 months.
Yes.
On the relaunch of Church in the Bar.
Yeah.
And, but you're not completely gone either, because I'm assuming doing things remotely, right?
Yeah. So for example, I send an email every Friday to all the volunteers that we have on the schedule about, here's what's coming this weekend at the bar. Here's some highlights. And I remind her why we do it, the Church, the Bar. Every Monday morning, I send a prayer request from Sunday. I did those things.
Mm-hmm.
I had I have a volunteer taking the prayer request that she's sending me that every Sunday night. So I'm still... And when I send an email to people, I always put a note, hey, so glad we're all doing this together. I'm here in Brazil, miss you all. So I'm putting this, you know, little touch there for people to know, hey, I'm still here.
It sounds a lot like what you see in the epistles when the Apostle Paul is writing very specific things about very specific people while saying, you know, I'm here chained up, but he's talking directly to certain people.
Yeah.
And you got to know that here's the point that I'm trying to pull out is that you are a modern day embodiment of what we see in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. And if the Apostle Paul can do remote church planting, then so can we. So basically that's what you're doing. It's not really, the difference is that you're not chained up, you're on the beach.
Yeah, exactly. I got a little advantage with Paul. See, Paul had to go through a hard time.
Right.
I didn't, but man, there's some experience I wish I had with like Paul had, right? So that's, I mean.
Well, and here's the benefit of that though. And here's something that I think sometimes we miss. There is value, obviously. There's value in putting down roots, sticking somewhere, right? And going deep with people, right?
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, there's value, kind of how the Apostle Paul did, and do itinerant church planting, you know?
Yeah.
That if you can set up the structure to maintain the relationship remotely, it frees you up to do more church plants in more locations.
Yes. So I think this is an interesting thing about this model, though, because this model is still an online community, right? Because it's the same, people are at the bar. The same content that they watch is the online experience that everybody else is watching online. They're right. just a larger version of a house campus. That's all that is. The interesting thing I think about this model is that it's not a personality-driven church at all.
Well, clearly not, because you've been gone.
Because I've been gone, and it doesn't matter who's preaching on the screen. People are there 100% because of the community, 100%. And that, to me, has been really what the spotlight for me, looking at what's happening at the bar. Because, see, even from Brazil, I initiated the process now to build teams, volunteer teams, because my first goal has been, let's build a core team of attendees, people that attend the bar. Let's build that. Well, now we have firmly, consistently 40 people coming. Mm-hmm. So now I'm having this, before I left, so I said, hey, now that we're here committed to this, mm-hmm. it's time for us to get our hands on it, the things that we can do. So we're launching two teams that I started from Brazil. I started the process. So we're launching hospitality team, and we're launching Church of the Bar Kids. Because believe it or not,
there's kids coming to the bar?
There are kids coming to the bar. So this 40 people that I'm telling is just adults. I'm not adding 8 kids that are coming there with their families. And we're like, now we actually need to have a room to start ministering just to the kids. Mm-hmm. So the parents, and that has been a very interesting thing. And because now we have to kind of expand this a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, so in a word, I said, well, I believe we're just a few steps away from moving from a house campus to a church planting.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, where you can see that, and this happens, what you just touched on, this happens in lots of different arenas too. If you have a big enough gathering, like let's take church out of it. We're just talking about people dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a big enough barbecue or a big enough dinner that you invited all these families to,
yeah,
the moment that you're so big that you have to create a kids table, that's it. Yeah. That's the threshold you cross when you have to create a kids table. So in bringing it back into like church life, when you get to a certain scale where it requires you to do something special for the kids, you know, you flipped a certain threshold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's one of those scenarios where, you know, if you try to make it happen before it does, it feels weird. You know,
exactly. And that is exactly, Jason, the thing I've been trying to show people. It is one, strategically, the goal was, we're in October. This bar is located by the scenic trail in Ohio, meaning it's the point, like when it comes to spring, summer, and fall, is the place where families are going to park, you're going to ride their bikes, take a walk, do their thing. I mean, there's in Ohio, this area in Ohio is 76 mm-hmm. miles of this trail.
Okay.
And the bar is located right on the side of it, right? So you have the river on one side, the bar, and the trail. I mean, it's just a beautiful place. And I thought my goal was, okay, let's restart this thing in October. Let's rebuild the core team, so we can be ready for the spring, summer, fall of 2021, that when people just want to walk in. Guess what's happened? That's where growth is happening. Last Sunday was my first Sunday back. Mm-hmm. And 3 people walked in, brand new, first time, because they saw the sign on the walls of the bar. That's it. Nobody invited them. They saw the signage. Well, and that's where I was visualizing before. It was, I want to be ready for when people start to walk in like that. And now mm-hmm. we're ready, because now we have the core team. Now we mm-hmm. can have this hospitality team that's going to receive people. Mm-hmm. So you're right. And now adding this kids component to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're already in like full-blown, you know, prevailing model church planning mode, it seems like. How are you planning on maintaining? And a lot of church plants go through this transition. when they hit scale, how do you plan on maintaining the sense of community as you grow? Because it feels like, and I'm just, you know, saying this, it feels like the systems that you're creating aren't based upon the community that you love when you started. And a lot of church plants start this way. They get a core group together and then they lose that core group once they hit scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's a bait and switch.
Yeah.
You know, the feeling that people had when the scale was smaller. And I'm not saying that big is bad and small is good. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that big and small do different things, and their areas of strength are in different places, and their areas of weakness are in different places.
Yeah.
So the transition is what's tricky, because what I've seen over and over and over in church planting efforts is the ones that decide to stay small and reproducing, where they get to a certain scale and they don't do kids ministry on purpose. They keep it highly relational and then they multiply it. That tends to scale really well.
Yeah.
But there are different types of weaknesses in that particular model when it comes to city movements and things like that. When you get to a like large scale, well, you can take advantage of the fact that you're kind of known in the community, and then you can just have plain old walk-ups from a sign, not from a relationship. And what happens is that when someone imprints from a sign, not from a relationship, you don't have that community foundation that you did when you started.
Yeah.
So, and then the kids ministry, people are, you know, because the kids want to come and all that kind of stuff. So now you're transitioning into a model that a lot of church planters are very familiar with.
Yeah.
How do you keep from losing that sense of community that you started?
Yeah, that is a great question though, because I look at the traditional model, if you will, like, right. So look at these churches, that many churches that started in the house, and today they're mega churches.
Exactly.
Well, they start with a small group and that sense of community, but as they start to scale up, it with time loses that first community aspect of it, because you go from a living room to eventually rows in a big building where you're all looking in the same direction. And I think for us with the Church of the Bar model, the thing about it that we cannot lose, it's how we got started and why we got started. So for example, the way we started is we're together in this room having conversations during the message and all that stuff. So is that the whole aspect of the model is we're not just sitting and watching, we're actually watching and talking at the same time. We're having these conversations.
That's good.
So that's part of it. But here's the problem. At the moment that I have 30 people in the room, then it starts to become a little bit of a problem.
Exactly.
And so as we grow, I'm preparing the people that started, turn them into group leaders, if you will. Mm-hmm. And as we expand the bar, as we expand the numbers, we actually have this a combination of small groups in the room, meaning
do
you know what I mean?
Right. So I do know what you mean. And here's what, whenever I see like these models, I try to compare them to something that already exists.
Yeah.
And what you see in bars that already exist is tables of people having conversations while watching a football game.
Yeah.
And what's happening is that they're in the interaction of, you know, having the conversation. The most important conversation generally is the one where it's around the table, while every now and then watching the game, seeing what's going on.
That's it.
And so what you're doing is you're taking that same basic culture that already exists and you're being spiritually intentional about it.
Exactly.
And instead of watching football, you're watching a service or Jesus or whatever. And so the conversations, hopefully, if you have intentionality with the leader, that the conversations aren't going to get away too far.
Exactly.
Not that, and again, what's interesting, and I don't know if a lot of pastors would feel okay with this model, but because they're insistent that you just like lock in And don't talk to anybody. Don't have a sidebar conversation that may be a little bit off topic. If they're cool with that, and I think the only way that they would be is in an online setting where they don't see it happen. and then they think that, you know, everybody's cool. But the truth of the matter is there's probably more relational community happening around the bar table that people are really needing, yes, with the occasional, you know, guide rail of what the spiritual topic is from what's happening via video, right?
Well, that's the thing about this model to work. One of the things I always talk to the leadership, the preaching team, first of all, these questions cannot be churchy questions. So, you know, we have every message, we're going to have 3-4 questions during the message for us to discuss with 5 minutes on the clock for us to have a conversation. The problem is, if I'm preaching about prayer, if I'm going to ask very churchy questions about prayer, I'm not going to reach out to this audience.
Right.
So we can still talk about prayer, but we have to formulate the questions that direct people to have a real life conversation. So we always talk about, you know, content is king, but I believe that content's no longer king, but relatable content is what's going to dominate the conversation. So if I cannot relate to that content, I'm not gonna be part of it. Mm-hmm. Another part of this that I really learned this by doing is every time, you know, situations where we have to split into smaller tables, and then you have the same family of four sitting on the same table, they don't talk.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk to each other during this. They feel awkward. But so what we're doing now is when we have to split into groups, has to be a minimum of 10 people in the group. So we put tables together.
Okay. And
people are going to sit with somebody else with a group.
Okay.
And somebody's going to lead the conversation. It's interesting that we are, during the winter season, we met in the basement because the basement has a real wood fireplace. We had the firewood going, you know, and cool, all that. Now the weather's better. We're moving to the balcony. So this weekend, we're going to be up in the balcony.
Okay.
Where it's open all the doors. And, you know, you see the river right next to you. It's a beautiful view. But because we're moving to the balcony, we're going to set up in smaller groups of 8 to 10, where people can actually then have their conversations. At the end of every service, we take prayer requests. So how we scale this up, we're going to have each table take their own prayer requests. And then that prayer request is going to be shared with them Monday morning, like with everybody that wants to be part of it. So I think the things that God has started and it started to grow is part of the essence that we don't want to lose as we grow.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't. And I love the way that you're designing it and some of the things that you've learned where a group of like 3 or 4, that's not, it's not the right size of group for what you were trying to do. So what you were trying to do was more of a discipleship sort of a feel.
Yeah.
That works best in groups of up to 12. Whereas if you get them in a group of 3 or 4, that works better for like an accountability group. And if you just throw people together that don't know one another, the group size tends to feel like, oh, we need to be good friends. To share really deep things with one another.
Yes.
And if they're not ready for that, they don't talk because it's not safe for that type of activity.
Yeah.
That size of group kind of lends you toward. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. And I think one thing for people to know, Jason, that one of the reasons why this works is working so well is because me as a pastor, I have a real life presence at the bar outside Sunday. So I am known at the bar as the pastor of the bar by large.
So how often are you in the bar outside of Sunday?
Oh, I can be there 2 or 3 times in a week. Sometimes I just stop by because one of the things I'm part of, I'm part of the employees Facebook group, the private group. That's where they communicate the most. So every week I'm putting a leadership notes there for them every week. Every week I put a leadership encouragement to the employees. I'm part of the staff meeting every month. I have 15 minutes to give leadership encouragement every month. I mean, right now in this high season, right now they have 85 employees. When there's a conflict within the organization, they usually ask to come by and sit down with them and have the conversation between employer and employee. And so, and then when I'm the bar, my wife, we go there. Today's a nice day. I'm probably going to take my whole family because it's a family place. Take my whole family. We go there. There are food trucks. We walk around and the employees, the staff will introduce me to the client saying, hey, this is Joey. He's the pastor here at Church the Bar. So, you know, there's this relationship. I was there Wednesday with the owners. We're just sitting there for a few hours in chatting, and everybody that came and talked with them, because they're the owners, hey, how you doing? And they every single one, they're like, this is just Joey. Here's the pastor of the Church of the Bar. He's my pastor. They were introduced like that. This is my pastor. And he, so that's this relational aspect of with the community. And I'm telling you, Jason, I think people looking at this model, that's what makes work really well. Because you cannot just think of this as the bar as a location for your church. You got to think of the bar as a location where you're actually going to do life with people. Well, guess what I did yesterday? Yesterday, I did a first site visit to a country club where we're going to be launching another campus like this at this golf course country club.
Oh, nice.
In September. Those guys just love the model. They're trying to grow the community, and they saw the upside of bringing a church under this model into this place is where it's very friendly. It's something that's positive for the community. But now, what my goal now is we are identifying a leader that actually going to commit to be there and do life outside Sunday, which is not hard to find somebody that wants to play golf more often, right? So
Yes.
But somebody
that can totally work. You know, here's some of the what I love about that particular approach, and this flies in the face of what normally happens. I think that these types of tactics are going to work really well as we become more and more post-Christian in our culture, because the hub of relationships hasn't been the church for a long, long time. And it hasn't been Sunday kind of thing for a long, long time. So the prevailing mentality is we will, in the church, leverage events to catalyze relationship. Right? That's the whole, you know, you come here on Sunday and we'll get you in a small group. You know, that's the basic mentality, right? What I think is an actually better and more sustainable approach is to do the exact opposite, to leverage relationships to catalyze better and perhaps smaller events. So the events come out of the relationship that's there first. So when you're talking about like church in the bar kind of stuff, one of the reasons why I think it's working for you is because of the relational dynamic that perhaps already existed. The event thing that happens on Sunday is like the cherry on top. It's not the main thing.
Yeah.
The main thing is the relationships and the community that you've created throughout the week or every single day. Kind of like how you see in the second chapter of Acts, where it says that daily they met together, that they devoted themselves to prayer, breaking of bread, all these relational communal type things. You don't even see them even, it's all plural. They devoted themselves. It's all like, it was all a community event. Even the prayer, even the breaking of bread, obviously, and the devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching was a communal event. And so this whole notion of us being able to do things individually and create an event that people are just going to naturally come to, well, that had better be some kind of kick butt event if you're going to pull that off, but you may or may not get relationships out of it.
Well,
if you start with the relational context, well, if people are just people and they love one another and they like hanging out together, well, that hangout starts to look an awful lot like an event after a while.
I, you know, the thing that hit me the most, and I'm thinking overall, the whole online experience, right? Not right. just the Church of the Bar, because the Church of the Bar is a result of the online, but I have other house camp, we have other house campuses, you know, also, you know, thriving and growing. And the thing about it is, I've been thinking of when it comes to Bible studies, groups, activities, and it really got convicted that maybe it's about time, mainly in the online arena, because it's such still a new concept for church, is we should be focusing in teaching people about relationships.
Right. And you structure the video to facilitate relationships.
Exactly.
Not to facilitate watching passively. And that's what I love about some of the things that you're doing is that you're not showing some guy teaching from a stage as a window into an event. What you're doing is that it's like a video guide for a relationship.
Because it's very interesting, right? And I don't have to go too far. I can look at Jesus himself to see and understand that he didn't do a lot of talking as much as he did a lot of demonstrating, a lot of modeling what that looks like. I mean, if you look at Jesus, if you look at it, just church model, he worked 3 years and all he was able to put together was 12 guys around him. So that's the worst church stat that you can put together, right? Because the guy could not work hard enough. I mean, he spoke to 5,000 plus and they still could not get membership out of that, right? So when you look at it, but look at the relationship that he put in these guys for 3 years and look what it took, the ministry. And if we look at that, it's just on that itself. I think we can start to understand the power the relationship can have in the life of the community around us. So the thing I think we don't teach enough in churches is just the simple thing of relationships. Just teach people to relate to others all the time. And our entire online community now, I had meetings, start exchanging mails with some of our online group leaders. And I said, listen, we're gonna take a shift here. So for the next season, we're gonna sit down and talk about, we all need to start studying, talking, having conversations about relationships. We have to learn to relate to each other. Now we gotta learn under the character of Christ. Right? So we got to learn that. But the focus is we got to be better relators, if you will. We got to be better
and for whatever reason,
relate to each other.
Yeah. And I'm totally with you. And there's a couple of factors, I think, culturally that have made that particular thing a necessary evil. Is one, you have like a very individualistic and independent mindset just from American culture. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggies. I mean, the whole country was founded on a Declaration of Independence, right? And there is a sense in which that can be a healthy thing, in that there's like scripture passages that talk about, you know, each one of ourselves will be giving an account before God in an individual basis. And there is a sense in which each of us needs to cultivate an individual relationship with Jesus. So I'm totally with some of the strengths of that particular mindset. Here's the downside. We don't know how to do relationships. We don't know how to do family. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of us, especially since, you know, and not just talking about the American culture, but what that has brought all the way through all of our technology and comfort, I personally feel like the community and comfort are inversely proportional many times. And what happens is, with the advent of just the car, right, where you can have a mobile society and you, many people, they just think, oh, I just will move to wherever the good job is, right?
Yeah.
And they're not thinking of the relationships and the connections that they have, whether it be with family or neighbors or their community. They're not thinking, that's not even in the equation. It's just, where's the best job? Where's the career path? And then they'll go, right? And with that coupled with the fracturing of just the family itself, where it's really difficult to find a completely intact family with kids that doesn't mm-hmm. have all of this blended yep. family thing that's going on that further fractures this whole sense of communal identity. Yeah. So you have with it, and that's kind of an American Western kind of a deal where we're just unraveling our sense of what community is like.
Mm-hmm.
You add on top of that COVID, right? Where you are forced to stay in your house and not interact with people or interact with them from 6 foot distance. That just makes all of the dysfunction that was already there even worse.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that is precisely why there's like this, you know, rise in mental illness and all this other mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And this sense of like, especially in the areas like on the coasts where loneliness is one of the biggest problems,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a definite strength with the individualistic mindset and, you know, go and do it yourself. All of those things are great. Take them to an extreme, however, and you start to get dysfunction. And that's kind of where we're at as a society. And so the whole notion of what you're doing with recapturing the sense of identity, communal identity,
mm-hmm.
you have to teach people how to be friends. You have to, because it's not going to happen naturally. In Bahia, you didn't have to teach that because it's already there. It's already part of the culture. That's not true here in America. And it's definitely not true with, you know, the more modern America that you're into, man, it is all kinds of jacked up in that way as it relates to relationships. So you have to teach that and you have to emphasize the scriptures in nuanced ways to help people surface this idea that church is not about a message and it's not about, you know, live Christian community theater. That's not what it's about. It's about a family.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extended family. And so if you can get to the place where people feel like, oh, you know, my, you know, blood family, my bio family is all jacked up, but my spiritual family is what holds me together. It's where my sense of identity is, my sense of belonging really lies. Now you've got something. And then you teach people to relate to others in a healthy, godly, family-oriented sort of way, man, you're going to stick out in all the best of ways.
I appreciate that. And I'm hoping, I'm praying for that because it's so needed. I think a lot of people listening to this podcast probably having the same experience. I've been talking with some churches, you know, constantly and about what's going on. And one, people are saying, yeah, the restrictions are being lifted, but the numbers are not coming back the way they used to be. Second thing is the people there back, they're not that interested in joining groups or they're not interested in serving. I mean, serving mm-hmm. in church has gone down apparently
very drastically.
And I'm saying those are symptoms. To me, that the people that used to go to church before and are coming back, they lost a little bit of the sense of why we're in this together, why we're doing this as a community. And I think one of the things that I think churches need to start looking at is before you go out to your community, you need to rebuild the community you have. Before you go out and invite people to your own community, because they're going to walk in, they probably are not going to find the community that you think you have. So I think coming back out of this pandemic, physical churches should start paying attention to, okay, it's time for us to rebuild this community here. Because if people inside this building can actually feel and act like we are a community, that spreads like a wildfire. Why? Because the world's desperate need of community, and they're looking for one to belong.
Right.
They're looking for one. And I don't think that's different to the online arena. I think the online church
is the same way. Yes, to your point. And here's the part where I think this nuance needs to be trumpeted, is because there is this prevailing criticism of online ministry in general, that it tends to isolate people from each other. And that can happen, right?
unless you intentionally use the online tools that we have at our disposal to foster and catalyze community, right? And that's what you're doing. You're not showing other people watching a show. You are creating a guide for people to learn how to relate to one another.
In a video.
That's basically what you're doing.
And so
that particular approach to church is vastly different than what you see most people trying to pull off.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have these two models going on Sunday morning, right? We have the three models. We have three models. We have the physical church meeting. We have a streaming from the building. And we have what we call the CC Live experience, which is completely different, redesigned online experience with community mind, meaning it's all about people having conversations. So the church is designed differently. Every Sunday we do this. Here's the interesting thing. So here's an interesting stat. The streaming has gone down in attendance, in audience, but that has not reflected on the physical attendance.
Wait, say that again?
So the streaming that's from the stage, the numbers has gone down.
That makes sense to me, right?
But the numbers in the physical campus has not gone up.
I see what you mean. Yeah, and I think there is a probably from what I'm seeing and from the churches I'm talking to and the percentages that I'm looking at, like nationwide, there is a good third that are completely AWOL. And that third that is now AWOL, we don't even know where they are. And that's a shame that we don't, but that's a different topic for a different day.
Yeah.
That third that's AWOL, right? They were the ones that would show up for the goods and services of the prevailing model of church that now are no longer as attractive, right? So the folks that have come back in the physical sense, man, they're hardcore, faithful people that really are locked into the community of doing church together in a large setting, right?
Yes.
They're into it, right? And oddly enough, I don't know if this is true for you, but it is for us. That group of people, generally the older generation, the boomers, they really want to get back together, even though they're at higher risk when it comes to COVID and all that kind of stuff. They don't care. They're more interested in the community side of what church has meant for them historically.
Yeah.
And that is their sense of belonging, right? Now, the other group that is, you know, a little bit trending younger, they're the ones that are online watching the live stream of the service.
Yeah.
And they're trying to fit it in with all their busy schedule and whatever. To them, their sense of belonging with the church and the relationships isn't as strong. And the more that you're into more of a consumeristic mindset as it relates to Christian goods and services, the more likely that you will become AWOL. To the point that, you know, the folks that are coming back now, man, they're either doorknob lickers or they're just really bought into the mission of the church.
Yes.
And they just want, you know, that's their church. So for us, we've gotten, you know, maybe half of what we would normally see, but that half is just as bought in or perhaps even more than they were before. Oddly enough, giving hasn't gone down because those were the folks that were giving anyway. So it didn't really affect anything, you know, from an economic standpoint. Now, here's the part that does concern me, though. You know, a lot of pastors would say, yay, we're still okay because giving hasn't gone down. And I'm like, all right, take this into any other setting pre-COVID. If you have a church where attendance is going down, you have an older congregation and giving is strong, that is the death rattle of your church. Because just give it 10 years and your history. Now, for whatever reason, we have forgotten that basic idea post-COVID, and everybody's kind of okay with the death rattle. That's concerning to me.
they're just glad to survive this season, right? I mean, I think it's all about today. Looking today's like, oh my word, we got out of this thing. We survived. We're able to stay here. But here, I think in the next year, as we got out of the, we get out of this pandemic, I think it's going to be incredibly revealing to the church in general.
Yeah.
Because as things start to settle, I think the church are going to realize, one, I'm not getting everybody back that used to be back here. And I think behaviors have changed through the pandemic, not only in the church, but in our community around us.
Right. The whole culture
is shifting. Exactly. Yeah. If the church don't pay attention to the change of behaviors and adjust to it, the church is going to start losing, and they're going to lose financially too, because it will affect people.
Yeah. And if you stop and think about it, there's, I don't know if this is happening in your area, but it is in ours, where I'm getting commercials from movie theaters that are talking about how awesome going to the movies is. And in some theaters in our area, you can go to the movies for free.
Wow.
That says a ton right there. What it says is they're desperate. Nobody's going to the movies.
Yeah.
And so the whole notion of getting in a space where all the rows are facing the same way and you get a large group of people, that is no joke. It is electric. It is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Like you see, you know, the last Avengers movie in a big packed theater, that's awesome, right?
Yeah.
It adds to the energy of the experience. I'm not discounting any of that, right? I don't know if that's ever gonna happen again. And if the movie theaters are already experiencing it when there's not a real reason for them to like do this sort of thing, I can only imagine what that could mean for people who aren't as motivated to go to church in a big gathering. It says a lot.
Exactly. And that's what I think what really is happening in the church, I think, already. The reason I say that, because, you know, we have a few people at the bar that used to attend our church. Mm-hmm. And we have on video, like, their testimony where they actually say those words. You said, man, it's great. We go to our church. 5 minutes before service, hey, how you doing? And, you know, we sit down, look at the stage and go through the service, come back out, 5 minutes, hey, how you doing? And this, hey, how you doing, is not community.
Right.
It's not community. And they say those words. So they like, I'm coming here. I mean, we have families that they're like, man, I love people in that building. That's great. But I'm not going back there because I need this right here. I want this right here. What they're saying is not they need the bar. What they're saying, I want to be with people having real life conversations and learning to grow like Christ. I want to grow up like Christ. I think that is a very fundamental thing that it's showing us, that is, we're like, okay, maybe we're missing something here. And I honestly, Jason, think that throughout this next year, I'm wondering what kind of impact this model we're going to have on our physical campus.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's going to change.
There are rumblings right now, and this is like, depending upon how you look at it, there's, I think, going to be the emergence of, well, it's already happening, the emergence of new models of doing church that are more niche in the way that they approach the communities that they're serving and reaching. And I think that is spot on. And another phenomenon that's happening is churches that were struggling, they're going to fold, and others that are in a better financial position are going to look at that as an opportunity to expand their particular way of doing church. Yeah. If that way of doing church is actually working, then that can be a good thing. If they're hoping that by mergers, they're going to create growth out of nowhere, I think that's going to be a recipe for disaster across the board.
Yeah, I in contact with a church in Atlanta, Georgia area, and they are really making a shift. So it's a very interesting model, because what they are doing is they have a smaller building, they have a big number of people, good group, but every smaller, instead of adding another service, they're getting a group of people to get people sign up from the physical business and say, we want you to host the service in your house once a month.
Mm.
And that way open up space for new people to come in.
Right. That's an interesting way of putting it. That's an interesting strategy.
I think that's genius because they're all showing their church people that one, you don't have to be inside this building to actually experience God in your worship. You can actually go to your house, invite a group of people from the church even to come to your house. We're going to open up space in the main building because new people, if people are looking for a church, they're going to go to a physical building.
Yeah, that is true. That is true, even though the people that are looking for a church is an ever-shrinking population.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. What I love about that particular strategy is that the people that would take you up on it are the networking, pioneer, evangelistic types of people anyway. And so those are the types of people that you want to start house churches all around the city.
Yeah.
And that's genius to do it that way because you're framing it within the frame of evangelism and making space for people who don't know Jesus yet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're doing incredibly well with that because they're now pointing out all these locations that they start to expand. One thing I told them, I said, man, the thing about it is you have to be incredibly intentional in building leaders. So every house, everybody in your church has the potential to become a leader. You should train them as a leader. So
That's part of the discipleship pathway.
Exactly.
It better be.
They're doing a phenomenal job with that. And on the flip side of it, a pastor friend of mine here from Ohio, Canton, Ohio, he left the church. He was in the church staff and he left and wondering what to do. And he started a ministry called Brew Pastors. And he's building a network of pastors from all over the country that it's their only job, their only purpose is when people in that location want to meet somebody to talk, they have a pastor. So I'm here in Ohio, right? I'm here in Mason, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And if somebody goes to his website and wanted to find somebody to chat, we're going to actually meet in a brewery somewhere. So that's why I call Brew Pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And he's building this network, and all he wants to do is connect people with something that they have in common. So people want to go have a beer. They're going to have a beer together with one of these pastors, and they're going to talk, where it's very friendly. It's a community base. I thought it's an incredible model of ministry that they're reaching out a lot of people that way. So people don't feel like you're coming to my territory. It's not like come to my church so we can talk about Christ. And it's not that. No, I'll go to your territory and we'll talk about Christ there.
Exactly.
And he's opening that door. And I think one thing that he's doing that's good, Jason, is because of his ministry, he's allowing pastors to actually see that venue. See, the thing about it is like, because of the way he's doing, pastors that never thought of considering having the title of a brew pastor and have that kind of connection, now they actually start to see. And I think one of the results that we're going to see through this brew pastors ministry, I think we're going to see more churches open to actually go out and meet people where they are more.
Yes. And one of the things that just comes to mind is as you're talking about that, is even you can see that with the methodology of Jesus. So he's going somewhere and a whole crowd comes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the crowd comes, Jesus doesn't ask for everybody to come to him, but rather he says, I must go to the next village. So even within Jesus' methodology, he felt like it was his job to go to the people instead of asking the people to come to him.
Yes. I mean, again, a perfect example is the woman at the well.
Right.
And he Jesus doesn't say, can you take me to your village and let me talk to your people about what you experienced? No, he sent her back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she's the one to actually do the ministry.
Right.
And do the work. And that's what I'm saying. We look at these models, we talk about this whole community thing. And Jesus set the example. He set the model. Mm-hmm. And I think we just have too much of a hard time seeing it.
Right. Because Jesus didn't have the relation. Like, in, even in your example, Jesus didn't have the relationships with the village that the woman did. The woman had the relationships. She had the relational foundation with which to do ministry. And Jesus didn't. So that's why he had him go back. And she wasn't the only one that he told to go back to your village. There were other people too, mm-hmm. that he told them to go back to their village. Why? Yes. Because they were the ones that had the relational connection. He didn't. And what we try to do many times, I think, in the prevailing model of ministry is we try to create relational connection. And that takes years from a series of events. Instead of taking advantage of the relationships that already exist and empower those people to create whatever kind of events they want to create that are might be smaller, but I guarantee you they're better because they're on the foundational basis of relationship to begin with.
Oh, I just had an idea.
What's that?
you just set it up, man. You and I need to write a book about go back to your village. We're talking about.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the name of the book. Go back to your village. Really, because because that is, I think we're so, I think, and I know I don't want people listening to this thinking that we're bashing down on a physical church. I think we got to be alert that culturally things are changing. And that's, I think, it's an opportunity right now to have these conversations, to understand what change we got to pay attention to, that we got to make, we got to adjust.
Right.
But that's what I think, that the current model of the physical church has not prepared people to go back to their villages.
Right. And here's another facet too. Like, even when Jesus dealt with large crowds, which do happen, and it's not to say that large crowds are bad, they're great. But when Jesus chose to feed the 5,000, he told them, sit in groups of 50 or 100. Now, if you put yourself in that group, who are you going to sit with to eat with? You're going to sit with people that you already know. Exactly. So if you came from the neighboring villages, because that's what the passage says, they came from the neighboring villages. You come with your village and you're told to sit in a group of 50. Well, you're going to sit with your village. In other words, Jesus was intentionally creating and reinforcing the relationships that already existed, mm-hmm. so that discipleship could continue when he left. And yeah. That's the thing that I feel is a little bit, you know, could be, because online and the technology tools that we have, they're a force multiplier. Technology has always been a force multiplier. It can be used for good or it can be used for evil. Mm-hmm. And it's generally a package deal. So when we talk about using online tools for church, let's be very careful that we're not isolating people using technology, and that we're not empowering them to reach the people that they already know for long-term discipleship.
Yes.
So a lot of times we just think, okay, we got to do this one hit wonder, come to know Jesus and your life has changed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that can happen, and I'm not saying it doesn't, but it's really rare. Generally, when I hear stories of that, there's been lots of preparation, and also after that catalytic event, which is great, there's lots of things that happen afterwards so that someone can continue in their faith. And if you don't have that relational connection before and after those catalytic events, it just falls apart. It doesn't really do it.
I got a great example of that that happened to us, right? So we have a one weekend service where the pastor's preaching about worship. So we're looking at, you know, constructing that service, how it's going to work. And at a meeting, I said, well, okay, listen, if we're going to preach about worship, let's give the church an opportunity to respond at the end. Meaning, you know, let's reverse this, which is not a new thing. It's not a new concept. But I thought it was interesting the conversation I had with the worship leader after the service. One, I want to know about it because I oversee the ministry, and I'm not there on Sundays. I'm not in the physical church on Sunday there, so I want to know from him. And I thought it was very interesting his response. He said, "Man, it was powerful. The church never sang like that before. It was amazing experience. They were like engaged with that." And I said, "Man, that's great." Following Sunday, I said, "So Jeremy, how was worship?" "I mean, that was okay. It was not like last Sunday, but it was okay." And I paused him. I said, "Now you understand that a big moment does not translate into the life the church really is." And I said, "Yeah. You gotta understand that big moment, that big hype in the end." I'm saying it probably was real. It probably people experienced that, but that does not translate into now we're going to the next level because it's a movement. It's not a moment. And I think that's the thing that churches have been seeking for so long, is that how we create these moments, the way the church can, thinking that if we create one moment, people are going to be like, "Ah, I'm now going to be like this all the time." No, because without a real relational discipleship in place, there's not a movement going on. It's just a moment.
Yeah, so, and I think when you put it in relational terms, it makes all kinds of sense. Like even today, I wouldn't even want to be like a teenage guy today that has to create a moment for inviting a girl to prom, engagement, marriage, all of these moments that would happen in within the relationship, man, to just the pressure that guys that guys feel to create these moments, right? But you don't create a relationship with moments. That's the thing. Yeah. Now you can have moments, and moments are awesome. They can be catalytic. They can be memorable. And I'm not saying that these moments are wonderful. They are, but don't confuse moments with a relationship.
I think and I think that's in church, you know, either online or physical campus, whatever that is. That's why I turn it back to you. We gotta go back and teach our people how to have relationships. They gotta learn how to have relationships. I think if we see a decrease in strong marriages, in strong families, maybe it's because we didn't teach relationships enough in church. Do you know what I mean? So I think let's look at the symptoms in our society. Look at the symptoms of what's going on in the community around us. And we're like, okay, are we actually teaching the right things? The things that help people to, and the things that are really important, because if we take Jesus' model of relationships and that becomes our centerpiece in a church, like we want you to have relationships like Jesus did, what that would look like, because everything else comes with it. I mean, I think people are so concerned about, I want to teach about how to, you know, understand the book of John and how to book of Galatians, or I mean, those are things, those are great things, but you can still teach those things in the realm of relationships, meaning here's what a relationship look like, and I'm going to insert the gospel into every conversation you have. And if I can learn to do that, man, I'm great, because the priority, the thing that people are going to see the most in me is that person is actually interesting in my life. That person is interesting in me, so much so that all that we are doing is teaching people to add value to people's lives. And there's an eternal values that we're talking about, but you're going to learn how to add value to people's lives by having relationships with people. I mean, I am the worst at it. I'm the worst. I mean, I'm the kind of guy who sits in a plane and I cannot put my headphones fast enough so nobody talks to me. You know what I mean? So I sit in the plane and I like, don't talk to me. Don't look at me. Don't. I mean, that's pre-COVID. I didn't have to have COVID to have an excuse to not talk to people. But in my own life, I had to learn to change that, because in every encounter, I see an opportunity to add some value to people's lives. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the big momentum of something or the small thing, or but it's this little, you know, opportunity. Because if somebody wants to talk to you, it's because somebody wants to connect with you. So value that opportunity. Value that, because that is might be a door that's opening for you to use relationships to add value to someone's life by connecting with them.
Yeah, and you can use online tools to do that.
Wow.
You know, it's like there's nothing stopping you, but you got to get that impulse and the motive in the right place. Mm-hmm. And then with online tools, you have so many more opportunities at your disposal, because if you can have a conversation, you can have a spiritual conversation. And if you can have a spiritual conversation, then you can do discipleship.
Well, we use this tool from ManyChat on our website that connects directly to your Facebook Messenger. So
yeah, we do that too.
It was very interesting because 2 months into it, all we put in there is, how can I pray for you today? Join the conversation. So when they click, they opt in into the Facebook Messenger. But Jason, in the first 2 months, there were over 300 people that click on it and opt in a conversation. So for us, I don't want to get too technical, but you look at, you know, we have Google grants. So we're driving around, you know, I look at yesterday, there was like 179 new visitors on our website. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people coming. And my thinking is, you know, we're challenging ourselves like, okay, if 179 people came to your website, they spend an average time of a minute and 30 seconds on it. A minute and 30 seconds. We're missing big time here to connect with people. We got to figure out how to connect with people through this. We're losing people. We're just losing them. So it became a big technological challenge for us, looking at those numbers and look what's happening. And like, okay, we're missing a huge audience here. They want to connect. So let's redesign this thing. Let's figure out how this thing works. Because it's not, and that's what I'm saying. I think for the people listening to the podcast, technology is the way to do it. And then we can do it actually fast. And you can do in big numbers, but the strategy has to be there. We probably can spend a whole podcast just talking about that. We probably should
right.
spend a whole podcast talking about how we use all these opportunities in technology to really connect meaningfully with people. But I mean, I don't know what you're doing. I know you're way ahead of me on that. I know that on how to use the technology on that. I know you are, and I'm. But man, how you're using this? Like how? Because that's what we're talking about. How do you build relationships with this technology?
Right. Yeah. And as long as you keep the relationship front and center, the rest of it tends to take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think sometimes people get a little sideways is when they fixate, and I'm telling you, because I've been down this road, you know, when they fixate on the technology and they're more excited about the technological opportunity than they are about the relationship with people, then you can over-engineer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then suck the life out of whatever sort of relational connection you could have had.
Yeah.
Because you're just throwing weight. It's like Saul's armor, man. It works for a certain type of battle, but it really can weigh you down in other ways. And I think that, keeping things super simple, like the chat thing, right? You could create a bot around it, because I know I've done it. It's like you can try to automate the volume.
Yeah.
And presume upon volume, but when it really comes down to it, it would be much better to create a human system that the technology can catalyze or provide. And keep it as human as possible. So like one of the things that, you know, we did was like, here's a really good example, like Church Home, right? Their little bot or their little messenger thing says, talk to a pastor. And they have a whole set of pastors that
mm-hmm.
instead of
like most pastors, they're thinking, oh, I got to work the lobby of the church on Sunday.
Yeah.
That same mentality where they're all like, oh, I got to be with my people and all that kind of stuff. It's like, dude, you can be Monday through Saturday with your people in the lobby, meeting people, connecting with people, using this little messenger thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so the messenger says, you know, pray with a pastor instead of how can I pray for you? Which again, how can I pray for you? Somebody's typing something and then they don't hear anything back. Oh, man, yeah. That is the worst, yeah. Right? It's way different when you set the expectation high and you have the back end human system to fulfill it, mm-hmm. where it's like, no, dude, these are real people. I'm wanting to connect with you as a real person. You know, that's way different than some kind of botanized thing,
yeah.
Which we create the botanized thing because we look at the numbers and we think, oh, I couldn't manage, you know, 179 conversations. You're not going to have 179 conversations. Exactly. Just like when you go to the grocery store, you see 179 people, but you don't have 179 conversations. You probably have one and it's probably manageable. So don't create or over engineer a system for volume that you don't have relationally. You let it flow organically in accordance to the relationships that are being created. Yeah. So if you over engineer it on the front end, it'll never happen. What you have to do is be hyper relational in the way that you use technology, and then, you know, just have it be a notification on your phone that you're always going to answer in the moment. Even if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, ask me how I know that.
Yeah.
But as a pastor, if you got a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning, you probably answer.
Yeah.
So there's, absolutely. Again, it's just another technological tool. I mean, we're used to as pastors answering the phone. Well, that's technology. We're used to praying with people over the phone. Hey, mm-hmm. that's technology too.
Yeah.
This is just another tool for people to minister to people and for discipleship to occur in that way and for care and love and one another's of scripture to be played out. It's just another mechanism for that. It's just one that we're not as familiar with,
yeah.
but it's there. It's still there.
But you can imagine what the things I think we're not paying attention to is that this younger generation, that's how they do it.
Right.
So, yes. You know, 10 years from now, this is not going to be a mystery anymore, but
right.
You know, a generation is going to be left out.
Exactly.
If they don't catch up with this, because it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. When this next generation become adults and they start interacting, talking to people, this conversation we're having right now, that's the natural thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
People through the technology and all that stuff. Right now, we're trying to crack the code because, you know, we need to catch up with what the next generation going to come and do it naturally.
Yeah.
So if we want to stay connected with them, we got to do this now. We got to connect with them now. Man, this is a good talk.
Yeah.
We got to do this again sometime.
Dude.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Online Pastor Coach Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, onlinepastorcoaching.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, and many other podcast platforms so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like this show, you might want to check out our ebook, A Local Church with a Global Reach. Joey and Jason are available for private coaching. Just send us a message. Now go make a global impact for the kingdom until next time.